Billy Pilgrim says that the universe does not look like a lot of bright little dots to the creatures from Tralfamador. The creatures can see where each star has been and where it is going, so that the heavens are filled with rarefied, luminous spaghetti. And Tralfamadorians don't see human beings as two-legged creatures either. They see them as great millipedes, with babies' legs at one end and old people's legs at the other, says Billy Pilgrim. Billy asked for something to read on the trip to Tralfamador. His captors had 5 million Earthling books on microfilm, but no way to project them in Billy's cabin. They had only one actual book in English, which would be placed in a Tralfamadorian museum. It was Valley of the Dolls by Jacqueline Suzanne. Billy read it, thought it was pretty good in spots. The people in it certainly had their ups and downs. But Billy didn't want to read about the same ups and downs over and over again. He asked if there wasn't, please, some other reading matter around. Only Tralfamadorian novels, which I'm afraid you couldn't begin to understand, said the speaker on the wall. Let me look at one anyway. So they sent him in several. They were little things. A dozen of them might have had the bulk of Valley of the Dolls, with all its ups and downs. Billy couldn't read Tralfamadorian, of course, but he could at least see how the books were laid out, in brief clumps of symbols separated by stars. Billy commented that the clumps might be telegrams. Exactly, said the voice. They are telegrams? There are no telegrams on Tralfamador, but you're right. Each clump of symbols is a brief, urgent message describing a situation, a scene. We Tralfamadorians read them all at once, not one after the other. There isn't any particular relationship between all the messages, except that the author has chosen them carefully, so that when seen all at once, they produce an image of life that is beautiful and surprising and deep. There is no beginning, no middle, no end, no suspense, no moral, no causes, no effects. What we love in our books are the depths of many marvelous moments seen all at one time. Moments after that, the saucer entered a time warp, and Billy was flung back into his childhood. He was 12 years old, quaking as he stood with his mother and father on Bright Angel Point at the rim of the Grand Canyon. The little human family was staring at the floor of the canyon, 1 mile straight down. Well, said Billy's father, manfully kicking a pebble into space, there it is. They had come to this famous place by automobile. They had had 7 blowouts on the way. It was worth the trip, said Billy's mother raptly. Oh, God, was it ever worth it? Billy hated the canyon. He was sure that he was going to fall in. His mother touched him, and he wet his pants. There were other tourists looking down into the canyon, too, and a ranger was there to answer questions. A French man who had come all the way from France asked the ranger in broken English if many people committed suicide by jumping in. Yes, sir, said the ranger. About 3 folks a year. So it goes. And Billy took a very short trip through time, made a pee-wee jump of only 10 days. So he was still 12, still touring the West with his family. Now they were down in Carlsbad Caverns, and Billy was praying to God to get him out of there before the ceiling fell in. A ranger was explaining that the caverns had been discovered by a cowboy who saw a huge cloud of bats come out of a hole in the ground. And then he said that he was going to turn out all the lights, and that it would probably be the first time in the lives of most people there that they had ever been in darkness that was total. Out went the lights. Billy didn't even know whether he was still alive or not. And then something ghostly floated in the air to his left. It had numbers on it. His father had taken out his pocket watch. The watch had a radium dial. Billy went from total dark to total light, found himself back in the war, back in the delousing station again. The shower was over. An unseen hand had turned the water off. When Billy got his clothes back, they weren't any cleaner, but all the little animals that had been living in them were dead. So it goes. And his new overcoat was thawed out and limp now. It was much too small for Billy. It had a fur collar and a lining of crimson silk, and had apparently been made for an impresario about as big as an organ grinder's monkey. It was full of bullet holes. Billy Pilgrim dressed himself. He put on the little overcoat, too. It split up the back and at the shoulders. The sleeves came entirely free, so the coat became a fur-collared vest. It was meant to flare at its owner's waist, but the flaring took place at Billy's armpits. The Germans found him to be one of the most screamingly funny things they had seen in all of World War II. They laughed and laughed. And the Germans told everybody else to form in ranks of five, with Billy as their pivot. Then out of doors went the parade and through gate after gate again. There were more starving Russians with faces like radium dials. The Americans were livelier than before. The jazzing with hot water had cheered them up, and they came to a shed where a corporal with only one arm and one eye wrote the name and serial number of each prisoner in a big red ledger. Everybody was legally alive now. Before they got their names and numbers in that book, they were missing in action and probably dead. So it goes.